Chapter 68. Reacher and Vaughn got back in the truck, and Vaughn said,
"Was that answer a yes or a no?"
"Both," Reacher said. "No, it doesn't get moved out. Yes, it's all still there."
"Is that a good both or a bad both?"
Reacher ducked his head and looked up through the screen. The sun was a dull glow behind the cloud, but it was still way above the horizon.
4 hours until dark. We've got time for a considered decision.
It's going to rain.
Probably.
Which will wash more TCE into the aquifer.
Probably.
We're not going to sit here until dark in the rain.
No, we're not.
We're going to the Holiday Inn and halfway again.
Only if we get separate rooms.
Shut up, Vaughn.
We're going to get the same room we got before, and we're going to do all the same things. The same room was not available, but they got one just like it. Same size, same decor, same colors. Indistinguishable. They did all the same things in it. Showered, went to bed, made love. Vaughn was a little reserved at first, but got into it later. Afterwards, she said that David had been better in bed. Reacher wasn't offended. She needed to believe it, and it was probably true. They lay in the rucked sheets, and Vaughn explored Reacher's scars. She had small hands. The bullet hole in his chest was too big for the tip of her little finger. Her ring finger fitted it better. Every woman he had been naked with was fascinated by it, except the woman he had gotten it for. She had preferred to forget. The rain started after an hour. It was heavy. It drummed on the hotel's roof and sheeted against the window. A cozy feeling, in Reacher's opinion. He liked being inside, in bed, listening to rain. After an hour, Vaughn got up and went to shower. Reacher stayed in bed and leafed through the Bible that the Gideons had left in the nightstand. Vaughn came back and asked,
"Why does it matter?"
"Why does what matter?"
"That Thurman is stockpiling depleted uranium."
Reacher said, "I don't like the combination.
He's got 20 tons of radioactive waste and 20 tons of TNT. He's an end times enthusiast. I spoke to a minister last night. He said that end times people can't wait to get things started. Thurman himself said there might be precipitating events on the way. He said it kind of smugly, like he secretly knew it was true. And the whole town seems to be waiting for something to happen."
"Thurman can't start the Armageddon. It'll happen when it happens.
These people are fanatics. They seem to think they can nudge things along. They're trying to breed red cows in Israel."
"How would that help?"
"Don't ask me."
"Cows aren't dangerous."
"Another requirement seems to be a major war in the Middle East."
"We've already got one."
"Not major enough."
"How could it be worse?"
"Lots of ways."
"Personally, I don't see any."
"Suppose another country joined in."
"They'd be crazy to."
"Suppose someone fired the first shot for them."
"How would they?"
"Suppose a dirty bomb went off in Manhattan, or D.C., or Chicago. What would we do?"
"According to you, we'd evacuate the city."
"And then?"
"We'd investigate."
Reacher nodded. "We'd have people in hazmat suits crawling all over the wreckage.
What would they find?"
"Evidence."
"For sure. They'd identify the materials involved. Suppose they found TNT and depleted uranium."
"They'd make a list of possible sources."
"Correct. Everyone in the world can buy TNT, but DU is rarer. It's a byproduct of an enrichment process that occurs in maybe 20 places.
"Nuclear powers."
"Exactly."
"A list of 20 suspects wouldn't help."
"Exactly," Reacher said again.
And the intended victim isn't going to stand up and take responsibility, because the intended victim didn't know anything about anything in the first place. But suppose we were nudged in the preferred direction.
How?
Remember Oklahoma City? The federal building? That was a big explosion, but they knew it was a Ryder truck within hours. They're great at putting tiny fragments together.
But presumably one uranium fragment is like another.
But suppose you were a state-sponsored terrorist from overseas. You'd want maximum bang for the buck. So if you didn't have quite enough uranium when you were building your bomb, you might use other stuff to pack it out.
What other stuff?
Maybe pieces of wrecked cars.
Vaughn said nothing.
Reacher said, suppose the guys in the hazmat suits found fragments of Peugeots and Toyotas sold only in certain markets. Suppose they found fragments of Iranian license plates.
Vaughn was quiet for a moment, working it out.
Iran is working with uranium. They're boasting about it.
There you go. What would happen next?
We'd make certain assumptions.
And?
We'd attack Iran.
And after that?
Iran would attack Israel. Israel would retaliate. Everyone would be fighting.
Precipitating events.
That's insane.
These are people that believe red cows signal the end of the world.
These are people who care enough to make sure ash gets a proper burial.
Exactly. Because by anyone's standards, that's a meaningless gesture. Maybe it's just camouflage to make sure no one looks at them too closely.
We have no evidence.
We have an end times nutcase with technical expertise and 20 tons of TNT and 20 tons of DU and 4 Iranian cars and a limitless supply of shipping containers, some of which were last seen in the Middle East.
You think it's possible?
Anything is possible.
But no judge in America would sign off on a search warrant. Not with what we've got. It's not even circumstantial. It's just a crazy theory.
I'm not looking for a search warrant. I'm waiting for dark. Darkness came 2 hours later. With it came doubts from Vaughn. She said,
if you're really serious about this, you should call the state police or the FBI.
I would have to give my name. I don't like to do that.
Then talk to that MP lieutenant. He already knows your name, and it's his bag after all.
He's looking at medals and a promotion. He won't want to rock the boat. It was still raining, a steady, hard downpour. Vaughn said,
you're not a one-man justice department.
What's on your mind?
Apart from legalities?
Yes, apart from those.
I don't want you to go there. Because of the radiation.
It won't hurt me.
Okay, I don't want to go there. You said there were fertility issues and birth defects.
You're not pregnant.
I hope.
Me too.
But these things can linger. I might want children one day.
That's progress, Reacher thought. He said, it's the dust that's the problem. And this rain will damp it down. And you don't have to come in, just drive me there. They left 30 minutes later. Halfway was a small place, but it took a long time to get out of it. People were driving cautiously, like they usually did in storms in places that were normally dry. The roads were running with water, like rivers. Vaughn put her wipers on high. They batted back and forth furiously. She found the turn east and took it. Within a minute, the old Chevy was the only car on the road, the only car for miles around. Rain battered the windshield and drummed on the roof.
This is good, Reacher said.
You think?
Everyone will be indoors. We'll have the place to ourselves.
They passed the MP post 30 minutes later. There were still 4 guys in the guard shack. They were dressed in rain capes. Their orange nightlight was on. It made 1,000 dull jewels from the raindrops on the windows. Vaughn asked,
"Will Thurman fly in this weather?"
"He doesn't need to. They weren't working today." They drove on. Up ahead, they saw a horizontal sliver of blue light. The plant lit up, much smaller than before, like it had moved 10 miles south toward the horizon. But as they got closer, they saw that it hadn't moved. The glow was smaller because only the farthest quarter was illuminated, the secret compound. Vaughn said,
"Well, they're working now."
"Good. Maybe they left the gates open."
They hadn't. The personnel gate and the main vehicle gate were both closed. The bulk of the plant was dark. Nearly a mile beyond it, the secret compound was bright and distant and tempting. Vaughn said,
"Are you sure about this?"
"Absolutely."
"Okay. Where?"
"Same place as before."
The Tahoe's beaten ruts were soft and full of water. The little Chevy spun its wheels and fishtailed and clawed its way forward. Vaughn found the right place. Reacher said, "Back it in." The wheels spun, and the truck bumped up out of the ruts, and Vaughn stopped it with its tailgate well under the curve of the metal cylinder, which put its rear window about where the base of the Crown Vic's windshield had been.
"Good luck," she said. "And be careful."
"Don't worry," Reacher said. "My biggest risk will be pneumonia."
He got out into the rain and was soaked to the skin even before he got his stuff out of the load bed. He knelt in the mud beside the truck and adjusted the ladder to the relaxed L shape that had worked before. He put the flashlight in one pocket and hooked the crook of the wrecking bar in the other. Then he lifted the ladder vertically into the back of the pickup and jammed its feet into the right angle between the load bed floor and the back wall of the cab. He let it fall forward, and the short leg of the L came down flat on top of the cylinder, aluminum against steel, a strange harmonic clonk that sounded twice, once immediately and then once again, whole seconds later, as if the impact had raced all around the miles of hollow wall and come back stronger. Reacher climbed into the load bed. Rain lashed the metal and bounced up to his knees. It drummed on the steel cylinder above his head and sheeted down off the bulge of its maximum curvature like a thin waterfall. Reacher stepped sideways and up and started climbing. Rain hammered his back. Gravity pulled the wrecking bar vertical, and it hit every tread on the ladder. Steel against aluminum against steel. The harmonics came back, a weird metallic keening modulated by the thrash of the rain. He made it over the angle of the L and stopped. The cylinder was covered in shiny paint, and the paint was slick with running water. Maneuvering had been hard before. Now it was going to be very difficult. He fumbled the flashlight out of his pocket and switched it on. He held it between his teeth and watched the water and picked the spot where half of it was sluicing one way and half the other. The geometric dead center of the cylinder, the continental divide. He lined up with it and eased off the ladder and sat down. An uneasy feeling. Wet cotton on wet paint. Insecure. No friction. Water was dripping off him and threatening to float him away like an aquaplaning tire. He sat still for a long moment. He needed to twist from the waist and lift the ladder and reverse it. But he couldn't move. The slightest turn would unstick him. Newton's law of motion. Every action has an equal and opposite reaction. If he twisted his upper body to the left, the torque would spin his lower body to the right and he would slide right off the cylinder. An effective design, derived from
prison research. 14 feet to the ground. He could survive a controlled fall if he didn't land on a tangle of jagged scrap. But without the ladder on the inside, it wasn't clear how he would ever get out again. Perhaps the gates had simpler switches on the inside, no combination locks. Perhaps he could improvise a ladder out of scrap metal. Perhaps he could learn to weld and build one. Or perhaps not. He thought, I'll worry about all that later. He sat for a moment more in the rain and then nudged himself forward and rolled over onto his stomach as he slid, and his palms squealed against the wet metal, and the wrecking bar thumped and banged, and then 90 degrees past top dead center he was free-falling through empty air, one split second and two and three. He hit the ground a whole lot later than he thought he would, but there was no scrap metal under him, and his knees were bent, and he went down in a heap and rolled one way, and the wrecking bar went the other. The flashlight spun away. The breath was knocked out of him. But that was all. He sat up, and a fast mental inventory revealed no physical damage beyond mud and grease and oil all over his clothes from the sticky earth. He got to his feet and wiped his hands on his pants, found the flashlight. It was a yard away, still burning bright. He carried it in one hand and the wrecking bar in the other, and stood for a moment behind the pyramid of old oil drums. Then he stepped out and set off walking, south and west. Dark shapes loomed up at him, cranes, gantries, crushers, crucibles, piles of metal. Beyond them, the distant inner compound was still lit up. The lights made a T-shape, a very shallow T. The crossbar was a blazing blue line half a mile long. Above it, light spill haloed in the wet air. Below it, the T-shape's vertical stroke was very short, maybe 14 feet tall. That was all. Maybe 30 feet wide. A very squat foundation for such a long horizontal line. But it was there. The inner gate was open. An invitation. A trap, almost certainly. Like moths to a flame. Reacher looked at it for a long moment, and then slogged onward. The flashlight beam showed rainbow puddles everywhere, oil and grease floating. Rain was washing down through the sand, and capillary action was pulling waste back to the surface. Walking was difficult. Within 10 paces, Reacher's shoes were carrying pounds of sticky mud. He was getting taller with every step. Every time the flashlight showed him a pile of old I-beams or a tangle of old rebar, he stopped and scraped his soles. He was wetter than if he had fallen into a swimming pool. His hair was plastered to his head, and water was running into his eyes. Ahead, he could see the white security Tahoes, blurred and ghostly in the darkness. They were parked side by side to the left of the main vehicle gate. 300 yards away. He headed straight for them. The trip took him 7 minutes, half speed because of the soft ground. When he got there, he turned right and checked the vehicle gate. No luck. On the inside, it had the same gray box as on the outside, the same keypad, the same 3 million-plus combinations. He turned away from it and tracked along the wall and walked past the security office, and Thurman's office, and the operations office. He stopped outside, purchasing, scraped his shoes, and climbed the steps, and used his fingernails to pull the screws out of the padlock hasp. The door sagged open. He went inside. He headed straight for the row of file cabinets, aimed toward the right-hand end, opened the T-drawer, pulled the Thomas file, the telecoms company, the cell phone supplier. Clipped to the back of the original purchase order was a thick wad of paper. The contracts, the details, the anytime minutes, the taxes, the fees, the rebates, the makes, the models, and the numbers. He tore off the sheet with the numbers and folded it into his pants pocket. Then he headed back out to the rain.
close to 1 mile, and 40 minutes later he was approaching the inner gate.